Malaysia is another country struggling to tamp down on information run amok. Dozens of newspapers, magazines, nearly 10 different TV stations, and even more radio serve this nation of 28 million. An abundance of media due in no small part to Malaysia's multicultural, multilingual status. Roughly 60% of the population speaks Malay, the national language. 30% are Chinese who speak any number of dialects, and 10% are Indian who mostly speak Tamil. Each group has a range of media in its native tongue, and often members of different ethnicities can't understand each other. But as OTM producer Jamie York reports, they share one notable detail, and that is...
utter, unthreatening, unctuous blandness.
The NASA group of companies has added U.S.-based Tutti Frutti frozen yogurt to its food and beverage division.
And here's something that's sure to entice your taste buds. Time Out magazine has identified 18 best restaurants in Kuala Lumpur.
Icon is an optometry network by current eye care practitioners from every state in Malaysia who believe that the way forward is in branding.
That blandness is because they're all governed by a near-perfect form of government censorship. But near is not complete. And there lies the beginning of a tale. In 2010, Reporters Without Borders ranked Malaysia 141st in press freedom out of 178 countries, in the same company as the Democratic Republic of Congo and Pakistan.
And there was quite a bit of hoo-ha because Malaysia is ranked lower than Singapore. Malaysians were a bit upset about that.
Masjaliza Hamza, a former reporter who runs the Center for Independent Journalism, says that when it comes to censorship, Malaysians' competitiveness outweighs their cynicism.
Not so much that they've consistently been ranked in the lower one-third. That wasn't an issue. The issue was that Singapore was ranked higher than we were.
Reporters who overstep their bounds get the call from government officials or notes about what they may not discuss. And Malaysian media outlets must be annually licensed by the government. Those licenses can be yanked if you offend this Islamic State.
Recently, with the controversies surrounding cartoon images of the Prophet Muhammad.
Zahram Nain is a journalist turned journalism professor.
One newspaper in East Malaysia covered that story, unfortunately had a photograph of someone reading the original newspaper with a cartoon. And it wasn't even a Malaysian, it was someone outside. It was a syndicated photograph. And because they used that photograph, the newspapers closed down and many journalists lost their jobs.
And if all else fails, there's the Internal Security Act, or ISA, which...
allows the government of the day to arrest and detain without trial anybody that they want, indefinitely. That fear is very real among a lot of journalists who are opposed to the policies and the ways of the state.
The government of the day, as Nain calls it, is composed almost exclusively of members of the Malay majority. It's been in power since Malaysia achieved independence in 1957. It is, to put it mildly, interested in keeping it that way. But a funny thing happened on the way to total government censorship. In 1997, Malaysia's then Prime Minister, Mahathir bin Mohamad, saw the potential for something called the Internet, to take Malaysia from an agricultural economy to one where fledgling online companies could set up shop. All they needed was a super corridor to the Internet and an environment conducive to invention and experimentation. Maharam Nain.
You didn't need to go through the high technology phase. You could just leap into the whole cyber era.
But only if Malaysia could attract creative entrepreneurs. And you know how they are.
Creative people can be a bit funny. Yeah, they need certain freedoms. And if they don't have those freedoms, they're going to be running off to other countries. Which is why he designed the Bill of Guarantees, that there would be no censorship of the Internet.
So Prime Minister Mahathir blithely punched a huge hole in the information dam Malaysia had so carefully constructed. Maybe he thought that the Internet penetration was so low in Malaysia that no one but the corporate sector would ever use it. Maybe he figured economic development trumped the risks of uncensored news. In any case, Stephen Gann was a frustrated print reporter who saw that opening and walked right through it.
That's where the loophole was for us. We can just call ourselves content provider, sell our website, and off we go. We decided that perhaps it'd be good if you have a website that provides a credible source of information to everybody. that it is run by professional journalists, that the stories are checked and double-checked. They meet that professional standard.
Gan and a co-founder called their site Malaysia Kini, or Malaysia Today, and they set about reporting all the things they'd never been able to cover.
Independence of the judiciary, we've been reporting about police abuses, brutality, deaths in custody, anything that's critical. Government policy on human rights. We saw our readership grew from, say, 500 to about 10,000 within weeks, and then went up as high as 300,000.
Somehow, and everyone has a theory, the government underestimated the internet until it was too late to rein it back in. Nain says it's a bit like firefighting.
They're so far behind that, you know, the fire's already spread. They're trying to catch up, but it's kind of difficult to do that. So I think they just screwed it up.
In the last 12 years, the internet has gradually reached 70% of Malaysians. Online news sites have proliferated, and there's this.
They were told not to come, but they came anyway. And confrontations between pro-reform demonstrators and police turned violent on the streets of Kuala Lumpur, precisely what the government said it wanted to avoid by banning the demonstrations in the first place.
Public engagement has coalesced into larger and louder public protests. This summer, approximately 50,000 people turned out in the streets of Malaysia's biggest city, Kuala Lumpur, calling for free and fair elections, or Bersih, for clean. Mainstream media inveighed against the march, but tens of thousands of people protested anyway. And Stephen Gan believes his site, Malaysia Kini, actually played a significant part.
On that day alone, we have 5 million hits.
In 2008's national election, the ruling party lost its two-thirds parliamentary majority, despite complete control over the election process and all of the traditional media. It was unprecedented. Obviously, change was inevitable. But Malaysia's online media was suffering the same problem as nearly every media outlet the world over. No money. Does democracy in Malaysia rise and fall based on a viable business model? Stephen Gan.
Making political impact wasn't our biggest worry. Though, of course, in the beginning, we worry about that. Trying to make sure that we make enough money to keep the operation going. That's our major worry.
Malaysia Kini has had to erect a paywall, an extremely difficult choice to make when you're the shining example of freedom of information. And then there's the thornier question of whether information alone is ever a catalyst for change. Nain is skeptical of what he calls technological determinism.
In the 60s, for example, there's this belief that television would help develop the developing countries, right? And it didn't in many ways. This whole notion that liberation depends on technological form, to me, is problematic.
Despite Malaysia Kini's success, Gan also remains circumspect.
I always argue that if Malaysia is to change, it will require three main ingredients. One will be independent media, two will be a strong opposition, and three will be a vibrant civil society.
In just the last 2 years since the ruling party lost its total lock on power, the government has been using the mainstream media to inflame old ethnic and religious divides. Malay versus the Chinese, everyone versus the Malay, etc. The old colonial strategy of divide and rule. Gan takes some bitter satisfaction in that, both in that the government is back on its heels and that its critics can comment on it in a space the government inadvertently created online. For On the Media, I'm Jamie York.
Jamie's story was reported from Malaysia on a fellowship from the International Reporting Project.
This is On the Media.
On the Media is supported by Reputation.com, with tools designed to help lawyers, doctors, and business professionals protect and improve their online reputations. More about controlling online reputations at Reputation.com. Support for On the Media also comes from American Jewish World Service, pursuing global justice through grassroots change at ajws.org. Constant Contact, offering email marketing tools to promote small businesses during the holiday season. Learn more at constantcontact.com. And the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR.